Well, hello there. Today I want to highlight an eye-opening documentary for anyone interested in the journey of childbirth, The Business of Being Born, available on Informed Pregnancy Plus. This powerful film delves into the contemporary childbirth experience in the United States, comparing natural births, midwives, epidurals, and cesarean sections. It's an enlightening exploration produced by Ricky Lake, aimed at uncovering the maternity care system and encouraging a dialogue about your birth choices. Informed Pregnancy Plus brings this critical conversation to your living room. For less than 25 cents a day, you'll unlock the documentary among a treasure trove of other resources designed to empower and inform you from fertility through parenting. Embrace an informed and empowered journey to parenthood with Informed Pregnancy Plus. Start with The Business of Being Born today at informedpregnancy.tv. And for a limited time, you can access this and more for free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Remember, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to bringing new life into this world. Back in the day when my girls were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones, but you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated in the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that there's no third-party ads, no unwanted eyes. Now, let me share some of the great features that make the Family Album app a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature about the Family Album app is you can order 8 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by ads when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you are still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. This is a little bit of a longer episode, but I mean it when I say that everyone needs to listen to this birth story episode. It encompasses so many of the problems within our U.S. maternity system, but also highlights some of the really easy solutions. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a board-certified OBGYN who's been in practice for nearly 15 years. I've had the privilege of helping over 1,000 babies into this world, and I'm here to help you be calm, confident, and empowered to have a beautiful pregnancy and birth. Quick note, this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 208. Whether you are a new listener or a returning listener, I am so glad that you're spending some of your time with me today. In today's birth story episode, we have Candace. Candace is a data scientist and mother of one based in the DC metro area. Candace has several degrees in mathematics and computer science, and she works developing predictive models for the government. She's also currently pursuing a PhD in artificial intelligence, focusing on recognizing and mitigating racial bias within AI technologies. Outside of work and studying, Candace enjoys spending time with her son and husband traveling. Now, Candace prepared for, and I mean prepared for, and had every intention to have her son unmedicated at a birth center. However, after experiencing prodromal labor for 5 days, yes, 5 days, she was exhausted and opted for a hospital transfer. And side note, that's actually one of the most common reasons that people transfer from a birth center to a hospital is for pain management. Transfer happens about 20% of the time. Now, it is in the story of what happens in the hospital, including needing to fire the OB mid-birth. That story demonstrates the problems in our system, but also some potential solutions. Again, everyone having a baby really needs to hear and understand this story to get a sense for what is going on or what can potentially go on when you give birth in a U.S. hospital. Okay. Now, one of the things you're going to hear Candace talk about is how she wished she would have prepared more for the possibility of giving birth in the hospital. That, of course, is what I specialize in helping you get prepared for. One of the main ways I do this, of course, is through the podcast. And the second way is through my online childbirth education class, the birth preparation course. It is specifically geared for those who plan to give birth in the hospital. It'll get you calm, confident, and empowered to do so. You can check out all the details of the birth preparation course at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. All right, let's get into the birth story episode with Candace. Thank you so much, Candace, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm really excited to have you share your birth story about being transferred from a birth center to a hospital.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So I'm Candace. I live in the DC area. I work full-time as a data scientist supporting the government. I live with my husband, Daniel, and we have a 2-year-old son together, and his name is Javier. We have 2 dogs. We're a dog family. We're kind of like a culturally fused family, Me being Black. My husband is Mexican, so everything we do in our life, everything we do in our household is very culturally, like, deliberate.
Right. I love it. Love it. So why don't we start, you know, in order to understand the birth, we got to understand what the pregnancy and prenatal care was like. So I guess my first question is, what made you decide that you wanted to go with a birth center? Did you know that fairly early? What was your thought process around that?
Yeah, it's hard to tell that story without telling like the backstory.
Sure.
So because I'm a data nerd and I analyze numbers all day long, and that's how I make a lot of my decisions at work and in my personal life, I was listening, and I'm also like a podcast geek. And so I was listening to an audiobook by Tracy McMillan.
Okay.
And it's called Thick, and it's a series of essays, and one of the essays is called Dying to be Competent, and in that essay she describes her experience with obstetric violence as a Black woman, and in it she mentions that was the first time I had heard the statistic that Black women in the United States have an elevated maternal mortality and morbidity rate,
right,
regardless of socioeconomical level. Right. And so that was a little bit jarring to me.
Sure.
And that came at a time where my husband and I knew we wanted to start trying to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And so I said, before we start trying, let me verify this information first and see if that's true, because that will steer the next set of decisions that we make about the pregnancy and about the birthing and all of that.
Right.
And so I did the research. I validated what she said, and then through that research, I looked at all of the different components and factors throughout prenatal care that women can choose or experience or whatever, to see what pieces created the best outcome for Black mothers. Mm-hmm. And so that came down to unmedicated births at birth centers with doulas present, and an emphasis on like midwife care throughout the pregnancy.
Okay.
And so those are like the four factors that I wanted, and I looked for and secured before we even started trying for the baby.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you are a planner and you were like, I'm going to have all of the things lined up. Okay. So you knew all of those even before going into it. All right. I love it. So then you got pregnant. Mm-hmm. So then what was your pregnancy and your prenatal care like?
So because I did all this research ahead of time, everything was as I expected it to be. Like, for example, one of the things we did before we hired our doula and before we finalized the selection of the birth center was we interviewed them and we asked them, are they aware of the statistic?
Right.
What do they do in their practice to help minimize that statistic? Right. What do they do to advocate?
Right.
You know, those kind of things. And so,
and what were their responses? Were they, I mean,
so my doula, it was funny because we sought out a Black owned doula company, but the doula that we ended up deciding on, she was white.
Uh-huh.
And so I asked her it because that was our rule. We were going to ask.
Right.
We're going to ask the uncomfortable question. And so we asked her and she, like, as we were asking her, she was like nodding and validating. And she was like, yep. She was like, I'm aware of it. She was like, I know about it. I advocate for it. And she was like, in my practice, that's like most of the mothers that I care for are Black mothers.
Mm.
And, you know, I make it a point to use, you know, my demographic to advocate harder for my moms.
Okay.
And so I was like, sure. Okay.
Okay.
And you know, she was aware, she was in favor of advocacy, regardless of where you were birthing, who you were, whatever.
Right.
And so like, we felt really comfortable with her. We felt like, okay, she's on our team. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to be okay. She knows our concerns at a deeper level.
Sure. Sure, sure. Okay. And what about the midwife and the birth center practice?
Yeah. So the birth center was really a fantastic experience for women's health care and for prenatal care, because I, like, as far as women's health care, I was very much used to going to a GYN and going to a doctor's office in the clinical setting. But going to the birth center and working with the midwives, it was almost like going to like a therapy session. Like all of the appointments were 45 minutes to an hour, but there was no pressure to use the whole time, or there was no pressure to stay within that time frame. And so, you know, we would always start the session by talking, you know, just chopping it up and talking about our day and just really casual.
Right.
And then going through concerns. And then at the end of the visit, we would do all of like the measurements and those kind of things. But it didn't feel so clinical. It just felt like, yeah, this is a natural thing that women can do.
Right.
We don't need to poke and prod every time you're in here.
Right.
If, and then like later into my pregnancy, I had this body, you know, image thing, and I stopped wanting to step on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, that's fine. You don't have to step on the scale. You're healthy. Like this is not, you know, the be all end all metric.
Sure.
You don't want to step on the scale. Don't.
Right. Gotcha. So that's interesting. You said like, even the things like the measurements, that part was like towards the end. Like it wasn't like you come in, get on the table. That's very different than traditional prenatal care. Okay. So overall you felt like everything, you were very happy, it sounds like, with your prenatal care experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
I felt like the emphasis on body autonomy and self-advocating and all of that was like in the forefront. I felt like a person. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like a patient. I felt like this was really like the team of people that I'm going to be going through this, you know, life-changing process with.
Gotcha.
It felt like a team.
Gotcha. And were the midwives Black?
So my main midwife was Black, and the rest were all a variety of different races.
Okay.
It was a really diverse practice.
Okay. And you met with all of them or just
I primarily met with mine, but if she was busy or had a birth or something, then I met with other ones. And
Gotcha.
even still, like meeting with different ones, it was still that feeling of talking to a friend or
Sure.
talking to like a therapist, and
Sure.
it still felt very comfortable.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. So what did you do to prepare for your birth? Or what did you not do? Maybe a better question.
Honestly, that is a better question, because it sounds like I did a ton, and I did. Like me and my husband, we did a ton. We did, we also did a Bradley method birthing class, because we wanted to make sure that he was like a really big part of the experience and my support team. And
Sure.
he put in a lot of work. But something that I didn't do that I wish I had done is I was so driven by numbers and statistics, and this is the formula to have success. I didn't even consider complications or what happens if a hospital transfer is necessary, what a C-section entails. You know, I didn't research any of that.
Okay.
I only researched the pieces that would make my winning combination.
Gotcha.
And so, well, once my birth story started to unfold, you know, there were the holes in the planning started to show through.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Did the midwives at any point during your care talk about what would happen if there was a hospital transfer?
They talk through, like, if I needed, you know, what were common reasons that people ask for hospital transfers, and then what the logistical process is if there's a hospital transfer. So, like, you know, you have, they have hospitals they're partnered with, and, you know, they make the call and they schedule, blah, blah, blah. So it was very like a checklist. It wasn't in depth. It wasn't like, this is how you should mentally prepare for this if it has to happen.
Got it. Okay. And then I guess just to clarify though, so you did the Bradley Method class. Were there any other classes or books or things that you did?
I listened to your podcast. I listened to tons of birthing podcasts. I listened to yours religiously. I listened to pregnancy.com's weekly podcast.
Oh,
I think it was like pre-recorded each week. They tell you like the size of the baby
right,
and all of that.
Right.
I listened to that. I listened to
evidence-based birth, maybe. The Birth Hour. A lot of people listen to the Birth Hour, birth stories on the birth. Did you not listen to that one?
I don't think I listened to that
Okay. All right. And then, so you were ready, you were prepared. What are some things that you wanted for your birth?
Oh my gosh. I envisioned this very serene, calm birth. I envisioned, you know, being able to put some of the Bradley method methodology into practice, meditation, deep breathing, relying on my partner. My vision was that I was going to give birth to my son in a birthing tub, with nice soft music playing, and we hired a birth photographer, and it was just going to be, you know, the thing that I had envisioned, kind of like when you plan your wedding, you know exactly what it's going to look like in the end.
Right.
That's what I had going on in my head.
Got it. About 95% of pregnant women are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s. Enter Ritual. Their prenatal contains 350 milligrams of eco-friendly vegan omega-3 DHA in every serving. One of the things I like about Ritual prenatals is that they are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Ritual works with world-class certification bodies to validate their products. Their multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO project verified, gluten and major allergen free, and certified B Corp. That means they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. Why settle for a multivitamin you're not 100% sure about? Ritual was literally built on trust, so you know it is the real deal. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women Prenatal to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off. Okay, so then let's talk about how things unfolded for you.
Okay. So I labored for 5 days, four of which were completely unmedicated.
Okay.
And so day one started maybe around 3 in the morning on day one. Uh-huh. I woke up and I was having cramps, but I had been having cramps prior to that. And they were just like, oh, it's Braxton Hicks contractions, you know, it's fine, whatever. And so I woke up and they were a little bit more intense. And so I went to the bathroom and I noticed what I thought was my mucus plug. And I was like, oh, maybe today's the day.
Right.
And so.
And how far along were you? Were you near before your due date, at your due date?
After? I was at 29 weeks.
39.
I mean, not 29, 39.
Yeah, 39, excuse me. Okay.
I was at 39 weeks.
Ooh. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So that was day one.
Yeah. So that was day one. So I was able to go back to sleep and then mm-hmm. I had contractions throughout the day. They were like 20 minutes apart for most of the day. And then into the evening, they started to pick up and they started to become more intense. And then around 8 o'clock that night, they started to be around 3 minutes apart. And so the birth center was like, oh, well, come on in. And so we went up there and the contractions got really, so when we got there, I was 2 centimeters dilated.
Okay.
And then, so I was there laboring, doing all of the techniques that we had learned, all the breathing exercises. We had our go bag. We were ready. We thought for sure he was, you know, the baby was going to be born that night.
Right.
By, I don't know, maybe by 2 or 3 in the morning. The contractions were about a minute and a half apart, and they checked me again, and I was 4 centimeters. And then by 7-ish in the morning, everything stopped.
Okay.
Like, just completely stopped.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, you know, that's okay. Maybe your body's tired. Sometimes this happens. Mm-hmm. You know what you should do? You should just go home, rest, and, you know, your contractions will start up again at some point, and then we'll have a baby.
Right.
And said, okay, so that was day one. And so I was kind of like, okay with it, because I was really tired. So I was like, sure. Okay, this is a nice break, you know, we'll just have them tomorrow.
Right.
So then day two starts and it's more of the same. It's kind of like a carbon copy of day one. So, you know, going into day three, I'm a little frustrated. Mm-hmm. So my doula comes over to the house once my contractions start up again. And she's like, we're going to do some exercises and some stretches that will hopefully help the baby's head put more pressure on your cervix.
Okay.
Because at this point, I still hadn't dilated past 4 centimeters.
Okay.
And so we did all kinds of different stretches and positions. And some of them were really uncomfortable and with the hope that that would happen. And it did feel like his head had dropped down a little bit.
Right.
So then, you know, contractions pick up even more. We go to the birth center. I'm at the birth center doing curb walking and doing bouncing on the yoga ball and just trying to get this baby going.
Right.
And, you know, the same thing happened. About 8 hours later, completely stalled out. I was in tears. I'm thinking, what is going on?
Right.
I feel like I'm doing all the things that I'm supposed to doing.
Right.
It's not working. So then day four comes and I labor most of the time at the house.
Okay.
In the middle of the night, leading into day four, my contractions start and they're really strong, but I knew that this was probably going to stop at some point. So my husband, we were sleeping in our room and I was like, I need him to sleep and I'm not going to call my doula because I need her to sleep too because we've been at this for 3.5 days.
Right.
And so I'm like, I'll just go into the other room. I know how to manage my pain and breathe through it. I'm going to go and labor in our guest room and, you know, it'll probably stop by the morning. And so I was able to get through that. By the morning, they slowed down and then again, later in the evening, they started up again, or later in the afternoon, they started up again. So we went to the birth center, and again, we're hoping, we're like, this time has to be it.
Right.
Like, it's day four. I have to have dilated past 4 centimeters because they're really strong, and they're starting to, like creep their way into my back and into my butt. I don't know.
Yeah, what you would call that. Okay.
So it's like becoming like a whole new sensation,
right,
of discomfort. And so we go to the birth center. I'm like, we have to be at least 6 centimeters. Like, it has to have changed.
Right.
And the midwife does the exam, and she looked like she was going to cry. And she was like, I am so sorry. You're still at 4 centimeters.
Oh.
And I was like, what is happening? Why is my body not working?
Right.
And I was just like, I can't do another day of this. I'm
right.
mentally tired. My right. body is tired. I'm hurting.
Right.
And I felt heartbroken that, like, I had to say, I need a hospital transfer, because I felt like I had failed. I felt like somehow I was unprepared and I missed a step and
sure.
things didn't work out. And it was just a big ego hit for me.
Sure. 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 Okay. Okay. So then you decide you want to go to the hospital. Were the midwife, did they try and talk you out of it, or was it
No, they were very supportive. I think they realized I needed the support, and they understood why I was asking for one. It was
okay.
It was a tall order, 4 days of
sure.
labor with no progress.
Sure.
So
sure.
yeah, they were very supportive.
So then how did they help facilitate the transfer?
So they had a list of hospitals that they preferred. They had two that the birthing units had midwives, you know, mixed amongst the nurses and doctors.
Okay.
And so they called them first to see if they had any openings that I could take, and they didn't. And so they were like, okay, well, the next one down the list, we have a doctor that comes to our practice every now and then for like high risk moms, just to do like checks on them.
Right.
And so we could send you to his hospital. And so I was like, okay. And so they were like, okay, you can go there, but you can't go. They don't have a spot for you until about 10 o'clock at night. And I said, well, I mean, I don't have any other options. So, okay.
Right. Right. Right.
So my husband and I, we go home, we eat dinner, we pack a bigger bag, because now we're anticipating staying overnight or a couple of days
sure.
at the hospital instead
sure.
of going back home after the birth like we would have done at the birth center. And so around the time to check in, we head over to the hospital, and we go to registration, and immediately it was just a night and day difference between what I had experienced at the birth center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it immediately, I felt like it became so clinical and so like, and like very like
mm-hmm.
regimented and checklisty and, you know, height, weight, how many weeks are you pregnant? What's your birth? Like, nobody asked me, how are you feeling? You know,
right.
what are your concerns? Like, there was none of that. It was very like, fill out this form, change into this gown. And even the changing into the gown, when the nurse gave me the gown, the registration woman was still in the room, like taking my insurance information.
Right.
And she was like, I need you to change into this gown. And I said, okay. And so I'm like holding the gown, talking to the registration woman, and the nurse is like, I need you to change now. And I was like, but everyone is still in the room.
Right,
can you give me some privacy?
Right.
And she's like, okay, hurry up. And then they like turn around. They didn't even leave the room. They just turned around. And I was like, okay, well, this is really insensitive.
Oh,
so yeah. So like from the beginning, I was like, oh boy.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Oh, that just, okay. That just sets you just feel like from there, like how is this going to go?
Yeah.
So I guess just talk through, let's get into
okay.
it. How did things go from there? Yeah.
Yeah. It was an adventure. So finally we get to my labor room, my labor and delivery room,
mm-hmm.
and I get set up in there. And so the nurse comes in, a different nurse now. She comes in and she asks me if I want Pitocin and an epidural. And I said, ideally, I don't want either. And she said to me, well, if you're not going to get Pitocin or an epidural, then you need to leave, because that's the only way that you're going to deliver here. And I was like, what? I was like, okay, well, maybe Pitocin to help me dilate.
Right.
And she was like, if we give you Pitocin, we're going to have to also give you an epidural. You're not going to be able to handle it. And I was just like, oh, okay, fine. We'll do both. I was tired. I was overwhelmed. I was all the things. So I was like, okay, let's do them both. So then the anesthesiologist comes in to do the epidural, and he walks in with like a tray of instruments and things and a whole bunch of stuff that are super unfamiliar to me. And he's like, I'm going to put in your epidural. And I was like, okay, how is that done? And he was like, I put it in and then, you know, you'll go numb from the waist down. And I was like, yeah, but like, how do you put it in? Like, it's not an IV. Like, how is it done? Right. And he's like, I take this needle and I put it in. He was like, now I need you to open up the back of your gown and bend forward. And I was like, wait, I don't understand how it's done. I just want to know how it's done. And he's like, I don't know what you're asking me. Can you please bend forward? Can you please bend forward? And then my husband was like, stop. And everybody stopped. And he was like, she wants you to explain how you put it into her, how it works. And he was like, oh. And so then he stopped, he explained it. And I was like, okay, go ahead. And I didn't know it goes into your back. I didn't. So that was new information to me.
My mouth is open. I just, that is so wrong. Okay. I mean, it's just so unacceptable. Like, that is not how you explain. You don't know. You've never had a baby. How are you supposed to know how an epidural works? And even for any procedure, the physician is supposed to explain the risk, the benefits, all of those things.
Right.
And that doesn't sound like that happened. How did you feel? Were you scared to have this person put this needle?
I was terrified. Okay. I felt like how Tracy McMillan probably felt when I was reading her essay, right, that like, I am a highly educated, you know, middle-class woman. I have great health insurance. Whatever. Why am I being treated like I'm an idiot?
Right.
Why am I being treated like I'm a burden? I'm not a burden, but I'm being made to feel like that just because I asked how something is done.
Right.
And it made me feel like there's this like social mindset construct that people generally blindly will trust people in uniforms or people with, you mm-hmm. know, a certain dress mm-hmm. that makes them look like something familiar. So doctors' mm-hmm. outfits and police mm-hmm. and whatever. And so that like intrinsic trust, mm-hmm. I guess, or mm-hmm. intrinsic obedience even.
Is
probably what some of the people in that hospital were used to, and weren't used to people asking and wanting informed consent.
Sure.
And so that was off-putting to them, or maybe they felt like I was challenging them, but I truly wasn't. I was new to the game.
I just want you to explain what you're doing to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, you're not asking a lot. This is the bare minimum, actually, of what is supposed to happen, that you get explained, you know, they explain to you what happens during a procedure. Okay. So did the epidural, at least the placement, go well? And did it work?
Yeah, that went well.
Okay.
As soon as it kicked in, I was like on cloud nine. I felt so much better.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, that piece went well.
Okay. So then what happened with the rest of your labor?
So I was able to fall asleep pretty soon after the epidural and the Pitocin kicked in. And so I slept for maybe 3 or 4 hours. And then the nurse woke me up and and told me that my contractions were super close together. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize I was having them.
Right.
And she was like, yeah, I'm tracking them on this thing. And she was like, since your water's not broken, I'm going to break your water. And I was like, oh, okay. How's that done? Right. And she was in the room for the epidural. So she was like, let me just tell this girl how it's done.
Right.
So she explained how, you know, how the different ways you can break someone's water and what she was going to do. Uh-huh. And she did that. And it was a wild sensation.
It is weird because it's like something is coming out of your body and you have no control mm-hmm. over it. And it's like, yeah, it's like just, it's a very odd, it's a very odd sensation. It sounds like she presented it as like, this is what is going to happen mm-hmm. and not as an option.
Yeah.
Is that
Yeah, it was very much like, okay, the next thing in this saga is I break your water.
Right.
And there's no left or right. It's straight through.
Right.
Okay. So I was like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. And it was the nurse who did it?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's not the case in a lot of hospitals. So that's interesting. Okay. All right. So then what? I'm just all like,
this I know. Is just, it's,
yeah.
It's all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. So then were people nice? Were they, or was it all just like?
At this point, it was still all just like uh-huh. really regimented. Uh-huh. And we hadn't called my doula yet because we wanted to save her hours for the actual birth.
Sure.
So we hadn't called her to come in yet.
Sure.
So she broke my water, and then she, like, this might be a little bit graphic, but.
No, go ahead.
So she, like, you know when you have a puppy, you get, like, those puppy pads?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, so she put, like, several of those underneath me, and then uh-huh. as, you know, the water's coming out, she's, like, moving them and moving them and moving them. Finally, it stops. And she, like, has me, like, kind of roll so she can put a new sheet, and she does all of that. She cleans the bed, but she didn't clean me. And although I'm numb, I can still feel, like, the wetness and, like, I feel gross. And so, like, she leaves the room, and I ask my husband, I'm like, I'm so sorry I have to ask you to do this, but can you wipe my butt?
Girl, this makes me so. This is one of my pet peeves. I'm thinking of some of my L&D nurse friends who I would be mortified at a nurse doing this. Like you get your patient cleaned up. Like you don't just leave your patient and just okay. That's just so wrong. That is not how it should be. Period. Okay. So your husband has to help clean you up.
Yeah. And so, you know, I get cleaned up, I get comfortable again. And
Do you know how dilated you were around that time?
Around this time, I think she said I was 6 centimeters, which was super exciting because I'm like, okay, progress, things are working.
Right.
So she brings out like a big peanut ball and she has me like lay on my side and like, you know, with the peanut ball between my legs, and then she comes back an hour later and I lay on the other side and she's like, this will help you dilate. And it did. After a couple of hours of that, I was at 8 centimeters. And then we were like, okay, let's call the doula. And so my doula gets there. And then the OB comes in for his first visit and he introduces himself and he is this big, massive man. And I'm like, oh boy. Okay.
Right.
And he walks in, he's like, I'm Dr. So-and-so, I'm going to be your OB. And he puts on a glove and he walks right over to the bed and he does a pelvic exam. And he wasn't gentle and like, didn't ask, he didn't even warn me that he was going to do that. He just did it. And it was jarring to me. It was jarring to my husband. It was jarring to my doula. It was not jarring to anybody else though. And he was like, well, it's not time to push yet. You're only 8 centimeters or whatever. And I was speechless. And he was like, I'll be back later. And then he left. And I was like, that was weird because I was talking to my husband and my doula. I was like, that was weird. At the birth center, they always said, I'm going to do an exam now. And then they would take their hand and put it on my thigh and say, this is my hand. And they would like kind of like pat up your thigh. So that, like, their touch doesn't shock you and say, okay, is it okay if I do it now? And you say yes, and then they do it, and it's fine. But there was none of that. It was just, like, boom. And I had no words to describe how I felt. I felt inhuman. And so...
I'm, like, almost, like, in tears. This is so awful. And...
Yeah.
The part about it that is so like it's just heartbreaking all around, but like this is a common culture problem in obstetrics. He probably thought he was doing nothing wrong because that is what he's always done and that is how he always does it. And we don't as a specialty start to realize we have a human being in front of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, even I've never been like that aggressive or anything like that. Before, I'll be honest, for a while it didn't occur to me early in my practice that you need to stop and ask someone before you put your fingers in their vagina, for God's sakes. Like, this is not like, yeah, you know, like, why are we not, this isn't hard. Like, why do we not think about these sort of things? So, yeah. So then how did you feel after that? What did you decide to do, or how approach things after that?
So after that, I was like, well, maybe, you know, I was shocked. So sure. I was trying to rationalize it in my head. And I was like, the nurses here and the staff here, when they told me who my doctor was, they were like, oh, he's great. Everyone loves him. He's super friendly. And I'm like, maybe he was in a rush. Maybe that's not normally how he does things.
Right.
So he comes in again a little later and he does the same thing again. And so at this point, so prior to him doing the exams, I had had exams done, obviously, at the birth center. And I had had, I don't know, three or four done prior to his. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I am extremely sore and extremely sensitive down there. So he comes in again and he does it again. He does the same thing, does the exam. And after he does the exam, he goes, well, you're not progressing, and I see this a lot, and you're going to fail at pushing, so we should probably just get ready for a C-section. And I was like, what? Like, how are you saying this? Like, explain this to me. Why are you telling me I'm going to fail? Like,
Right.
And it was just like, he was like, nope, I see this a lot. This isn't going to work. And very, like, matter of fact, very upsetting And so I was like, no. And so my doula at this point comes in and she's like, well, you know, let's give it a little bit more time and, you know, see if you dilate. Because I was at 9 centimeters at that point. Okay. And she's like, you're almost there. Let's give it a little more time. I'm sure if we do some more position changes, we can get the pressure down and we can get to 10. Just, you know, give her a chance. And he's like, okay. And he walks out. And I tell my husband and my doula, well, I told the nurse first. I told his nurse first. I was like, I don't want him to do any more pelvic exams on me. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, it hurts when he does it. He doesn't ask. And I don't feel comfortable with it. And I was like, I would actually prefer maybe if you did them. And she was like, oh, I can't do them. And I was like, why not? And she said, he has to do them because he's the one who has to give you permission to push, or else he won't get paid by your insurance, or something like that. And I was like, huh? I'm like, how is he going to give me permission to push? That what? Oh my God. And so I was like, okay. And so I turned from her and now I'm facing my husband and I'm like, I don't want him to touch me anymore. I don't care what that means for insurance. He needs not touch me. I don't care who they bring in to do the, if a pelvic exam is needed, but it can't be him. And so my husband's like, okay, I'll fire him. And I was like, okay. Cause I prior to this, mm-hmm. I had read a thing, or maybe I listened to a podcast mm-hmm. and found out that you can fire your doctor.
I've had it in a couple episodes. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's your podcast. Yeah. Yeah, you can, if someone on the staff is making you uncomfortable, you can ask to see someone different. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to stand up for myself a little bit. And so he comes back in, puts on the glove, and I can tell he's about to do the thing again. And so my husband's like, can I talk to you outside, doctor? And he's like, sure. And so they go into the hallway and my husband tells him, I couldn't hear them, but my husband told me what he said. Right. But he tells him, Candace is uncomfortable with you touching her. So we're going to ask for a new OB to do her care. And he was like, what? And he was like, what did you not understand? And he's like, what do you mean she doesn't want me to touch her? And my husband's like, she's not comfortable with you touching her. We want a new doctor.
Right.
And he's like, fine. And so he like leaves. We get assigned another doctor. And that doctor ended up being fantastic. She ended up being like a breath of fresh air. Prior to being at that hospital, she had worked at a birth center amongst midwives. So it was like, finally, light at the end of the tunnel. So she comes in. I think my doula and my husband kind of briefed her before she came in to talk to me, like what was going on, why I was there, why we fired the doctor. So she came in, she sat down next to me, and she introduced herself, and she said, she told me her background and how her care is different than that guy's care, and, you know, whatever would make me comfortable, she's willing to do. And I told her I cannot tolerate any more pelvic exams. And she was like, she validated me. I hear you. She's like, I need to do just one. I just need to do one. And then I won't do any more, I promise. And so I was like, okay. But she did the same thing they did at the birth center. You know, I'm going to do an exam now. Here's my hand. Pat, pat, pat. May I perform it now? And so it still hurt. Because I was already pretty sore.
Sure.
But it was a different experience. It mm-hmm. was like, finally, like, I feel like a person again.
Right.
And so now the care team is getting back to a good place. But then, like, physically, things are not going to plan.
Okay.
So I can't remember what they called it. But my cervix was swollen on one side.
Mm-hmm. Maybe an anterior lip, sometimes we call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an anterior mm-hmm. lip. So that side wasn't going to stretch anymore. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to expand anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, you're like 9.5. You can push, but it might take a while. It might be difficult, whatever. So she gave me permission to push. We started pushing. I changed positions so many times, mm-hmm. and I was pushing for about 3.5 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the baby did not, like, my husband said he could see the top of his head, but he did not come out of the cervix the entire time.
Okay.
And the more I pushed, the more inflamed my cervix got, and the more pain I got. And I didn't realize that, like, epidurals are kind of, like, gravity-based. So if you're elevated, like on your hands and knees or something, all of the numbing will go to the lowest part. And so it felt like the epidural was like in my shins and in my feet and not where I needed it.
Gotcha.
So the pain level spiked.
It was
awful.
Okay.
And so I asked, I was like, can I please have some kind of pain medicine? Can I have something? And so I don't know what they gave me. They gave me something and it didn't help with the pain, but it made me like really woozy mm-hmm. and spaced out.
Yes, maybe fentanyl.
Okay. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, whatever. Like I felt very whatever. Uh-huh. I could still feel the pain, but I didn't care so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then that's when the pain really like shifted.
Okay.
And then this is going to sound really graphic, but I don't know how else to describe it. I felt like I was sitting on a railroad spike.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like a really sharp pain
like
in my butt.
Right.
And it was too much.
Okay.
It was way too much. And I turned to my doula and I was like, I'm done. I was like, I want a C-section. And she was like, no, you can do it. And I was like, no.
You're not hearing what I'm saying.
I'm like, no, I don't. That's not what I need. Right? I don't need a cheerleader right now. Like, I'm telling you, I'm done with this.
Right.
Like, I can't.
Right.
Like, it's okay.
Right.
I've come to terms. This isn't it.
Right.
This isn't how I have my son.
Right.
I was like, I want a C-section. I got to be done with this. And so she was like, okay.
This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. Using the latest in breast milk science, ByHeart created a clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula that's made with organic, grass-fed whole milk, certified clean ingredients, and features a patented protein blend that gets closest to breast milk. Their blend includes the most abundant protein found in breast milk, alpha-lac, as well as lactoferrin, the number one protein found in colostrum. In addition to its patented protein blend, their formula includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey to casein ratio, like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system and makes it an easy-to-digest formula. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code Dr. Nicole for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
So she told the doctor immediately starts to set it up. And about 20 minutes later, they wheeled me back to the OR. And they, I didn't research C-sections. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how they were supposed to be done.
Sure.
So I go back first to get prepped. And they were like, your husband will join you later. And I said, okay. And so they put me on the table, or I'm on the, they shift me to the operating table. And they put this big drape up so I can't see what's in front of me. Mm-hmm. And then they strap my arms to the table. And I don't know if that's normal or not, but it was,
you don't have
I
to.
Thought it was odd.
This is you, it, we used to do like, it's unnecessary. Okay. We do it when people have general anesthesia because they can't literally can't control their arms when they're completely asleep.
Okay.
But when people are awake, we actually do not need to strap their arms. It's a leftover thing that we still do for that some hospitals still do for no reason.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
yes, well, it
course,
was done.
You know,
yeah.
Of course it would happen in my story. Why not? So arms are strapped. So I'm like in a T, and the doctor said, or the anesthesiologist is like, you might tremble a little bit because of the medicine. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like I don't know what that means.
Right.
Okay. And so he starts the medicine. I like go numb from the chest down and I start like violently shaking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is
bizarre.
Weird. Yeah. This mm-hmm. is crazy. Mm-hmm. And my husband comes back and he's like, why are you shaking? And the doctor's like, oh, it's normal. And we're like, okay. And so we're like, whatever at this point.
It's just such a reminder. Like we see these things. So we know that. But the person in front of us does not know that. Yeah. And it's going to seem crazy that they're shaking uncontrollably. Like, mm-hmm. we need to do a little more to, you know, anyway. So, okay. So then how did the C-section itself go?
So the C-section was fine. They, you know, the same OB, she performed it.
Okay.
So she's doing what she needs to do. I'm hearing sounds of things. My husband is talking to me to keep me calm.
Right.
And then she was like, okay, here comes the baby. And I was like, okay.
Right.
and I feel this enormous amount of pressure. Mm-hmm. It didn't hurt, but it was an overwhelming mm-hmm. amount of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like pop. And then I hear a scream.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, my baby's
right.
here. And so they take him and they pop him around the curtain. They're like, here he is. And then I was like, yay, I get to hold him. And then they take him away.
Okay.
And they took him over to like the cleaning station
right.
and
right.
to do all of that.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't get to, you know, be face to face or be the first person to touch him
right.
or whatever.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay. So they take him and they're cleaning him up. And they're like, I'm like, can my husband come over there? And they're like, in a minute. And I'm like, okay. And so eventually they're like, okay, come on over, Dad. And so he goes over, he cuts the umbilical cord. He gets to hold Javi. And I'm like, can I hold him? And they're like, you can't hold him until you leave here, until you leave the operating room. And I'm like, okay. And so they finish closing me up and, you know, taking me off the medicine. They wheel me back to the laboring room
mm-hmm.
and sit me up. And then they bring, and then my husband brings Javi over to me. And that's the first time I held him.
Right.
So like 20 minutes after I gave birth to him,
right.
I got to hold him.
Right. So they didn't try to do skin to skin in the OR, it sounds like.
No.
Yeah. It wasn't offered as an option.
No.
Okay. 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 It certainly can be done, especially now granted it can be awkward because you're laying on the table.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's part of the reason, like they strap your arms down. They, you know, I'm getting off on a tangent in my head about some of the thoughts or things, but people get so used to doing things a certain way that they can't see what, you know, they can't see the things that can be changed. So,
and like, I get that, like, I get that what was going on to the doctors and the medical staff, this is their day job. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it can be very like routine and mm-hmm. like they pop out babies all the time and it's, you know, but to the person on the other side, you know, me, this is a life experience. This is like a core memory being formed. And I get my core memory is your day job, but like, try to remember that a little bit, like the bedside manner, like just a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Oh Lord. Okay. So then what was the postpartum period like?
In the hospital, it was like kind of more of the same.
Sure. Okay.
So, you know, I didn't know that they come in and like push on your stomach immediately. That was horrible.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, that was what it was.
Okay.
They wheel us up to the recovery room, and they were like, and remember, this is during the pandemic. This is 2021.
Sure. Okay.
So no visitors. We're not allowed to leave our room. And all of that. And so they wheel us up. Javi's in the little baby Tupperware thing. And and the nurse that was assigned to me in there, she was like, okay. She's like, do you want to stand up? And I was like, yeah, I want to stand up. And she was like, okay, let's try to stand up. And so I tried to sit up, and I was like, this is the worst pain I've ever felt. And she was like, oh, did you just have a C-section? And I was like, yeah. She was like, oh, you're not going to stand up today. And I'm like, why'd you offer then?
Ma'am, I need you to read my chart before you come in the room, please.
I was like, what?
Right. Oh, my goodness.
She was like, oh, why didn't you say so? I'm like, are you serious?
Shouldn't you know that? Like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, no standing up.
Right.
And again, didn't prepare for what recovery after a C-section entails, but that was a beast in itself. But so, you know, continuing the thing that we had started of informed consent and advocating. And so the next morning, a pediatrician comes in and he's like, I'm going to be your son's pediatrician, blah, blah. And he walks over and he goes to pick up Javi. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
And he was like, I'm going to check him out. And I was like, what does check him out mean?
Right.
And he's like, I'm going to perform the exam. I was like, but what does the exam, like, what are you going to do?
Right.
And he was like, I don't understand. I'm like, are you going to weigh him? Are you going to take his temperature? Are you going to check his heart? Like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh. And then he named all the things.
Sure.
And then after that visit, anytime he came in, he would announce himself, tell me what he was going to do, and then do it.
Yes.
And so he was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, and then like the rest of the care, maybe they wrote it on my chart, I don't know, but everyone started to do that after that. And then, you know, things started going smoothly. And so now it's like day two after the C-section.
Uh-huh.
And I still haven't like I've now learned to like figure out how to pull myself to a sitting position.
Right.
And enough to like shuffle to the bathroom. But that was like kind of all on my own. And I had asked the nurse, I was like, is like someone maybe from like physical therapy or something going to show me how to walk again or how to move around after having a C-section? And the nurse said, oh yeah, they usually come in right before you discharge. And I thought, that seems late. I feel like that should be maybe towards the beginning of the care.
Right.
So day three comes and we're preparing to discharge from the hospital. And I think the last appointment was like physical therapy to show me how to show me the stuff that I had pretty much already figured out.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And so then after we left the hospital, I wanted to make an appointment at the birth center with the care team there. And it was a little bit upsetting because they were like, okay, we usually do two visits with mom after the baby is born. But since you did a hospital transfer, all of your additional care has to be through the hospital.
Oh.
And so I was like, ugh, this sucks.
Right.
So I did my follow-ups on the C-section at the hospital. And, you know, that was, I don't know, that was pretty routine.
Right. Okay. And did you breastfeed?
No. We exclusively formula fed.
Okay. And then did you see the doctor who had done the C-section, or did you see other?
I saw, I don't even remember her name, but it was a different doctor.
Okay.
Each time I went for the two follow-ups I did at the hospital, they were different doctors.
Okay. I'm surprised the birth center didn't see you at least once afterwards. That is a little bit, I'm just surprised they didn't see you at least once afterwards. Yeah,
I thought so too.
Right.
I thought,
right.
you know. At least just to catch up and see the baby.
right.
I did end up taking him up there for them to see him, but yeah.
Gotcha. So I guess as we wrap up, how do you feel overall about the experience?
So if you were to ask me this like 3 months afterwards, mm-hmm. I was in full on postpartum depression. I was really disappointed in myself. I hated how my birth experience turned out.
Sure.
It was just a really, really bad memory, really mm-hmm. upsetting memory. Mm-hmm. My husband, he even had nightmares about seeing me in that much pain and going through. And right. I feel like that's also a thing that, you know, we don't really consider is the Agreed. Effects mm-hmm. of these things yeah. on the birthing partners.
Yeah.
But, yeah. you know, he definitely had his own mental struggles with that one. Mm-hmm. But it took a lot of processing to accept what happened and, you know, make sense of it and, right. and see the light in it and see sure. like, you know, we did everything that we could have done and everything that we could have done that we ended up doing, we did well. Like, I sure. labored for 4 days unmedicated. Yeah. That's a feat.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Did you seek any professional help to help process things?
Yeah. Okay. I definitely did. I saw a therapist who specialized in postpartum depression.
Okay.
Then, you know, I met with her twice a week in the beginning, and then we phased back to once a week, and then every okay. 2 weeks as okay. things.
Oh, improved. Twice a week. Okay.
Yeah, I was.
Gotcha.
I don't
gotcha.
Know. It was a weird adjustment period. I don't know if it was because my son came from a C-section, mm-hmm. but there were moments in the first 3 months where he could have been anyone's baby. Like it didn't click with me that he was mine. Like I almost felt like I was babysitting.
Right.
I don't feel like I like that mom closeness, like clicked in until maybe around 6 months. And then right. I was like, oh yeah, this is me. This is mine.
I grew this human.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was weird. I'm like, where did this baby come from?
Right.
Like,
right.
This guy was in here.
Right. Right. Okay. And then what is the one piece of advice that you would give to people who are preparing to give birth? I think I have a guess for what it is, but let me see what you say.
Prepare for the unexpected.
No, I knew it. Yeah. That's what I figured. Yes.
At least have an idea of, you know, well, I mean, you may not know about like prodermal labor. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, where your mm-hmm. labor starts. And you may not know about that, but sure. like. You know, you should look into, you know, what happens in a C-section mm-hmm. or what happens with how an epidural is put. Even if you don't plan on having that, you know, just sure. knowing that.
Right, right.
Would have
right.
made things, I think, maybe a little bit less stressful for me.
Gotcha.
And also to advocate for yourself.
1,000%. Yeah, 1,000%. So where can women connect with you? You can say nowhere if you want.
I'm on Instagram.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. My Instagram is Candace Brown 7.
Okay.
Candace spelled A-C-E.
All right. Well, we will put that in the show notes. Well, Candace, thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the podcast. Your story just unfortunately highlights so many of the problems in our traditional hospital system, but also I think shows how it doesn't have to be that mm-hmm. way. Like it just doesn't have to be. So thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I appreciate you giving me space to share. I know it's a heavy story and, you know, I don't want to trauma dump on anyone, but it does feel good to share that story. And I do want to mention that I know that this is, you know, my story is not what is to be expected out of a pregnancy and out of a delivery. So I don't want to like scare anybody off, but, you know, being prepared.
Sure. But we have to be honest about the reality of what people yeah. are experiencing. You know, if we don't know it, then we can't do better. Okay, wasn't that a lot? I'm so glad that Candace came on and shared her story. I really appreciate her taking the time to do so. Again, it just highlights some of the major issues that can happen in our system. Now, you know, after every episode when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's notes from my conversation with Candace. Two of them are quick. One of them is a little bit longer. One, I want to say that how she talked about labor starting, stopping for a number of days, that is not uncommon. So definitely be prepared for the possibility that that can happen. I'm not going to say like it happens to most people, but it certainly is a possibility that that sort of prodromal labor can last for hours, days, sometimes even weeks. Okay. Number two, I want to reiterate the importance of preparing for possible things that could come. Not just in a hospital birth, but in birth in general. That is one of the things that I focus on in the birth preparation course. I have a whole module section on preparing for possibilities. So definitely check that out. The birth preparation course is my online childbirth education class. You can learn all the details at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. And then the thing that I want to spend the most time on in my Dr. Nicole's notes is the culture problem that we have with obstetrics in the US. And by culture problem, I mean a culture of not explaining things appropriately to patients, a culture of this assumed deference to authority, that business-like approach to medicine and like checklist and doing all the things, doing things like a vaginal exam without explicit consent. All of those things, unfortunately, are things that are pretty or can be pretty routine within our system because that's the culture that is learned and perpetuated. As I said in the episode, these are things that I myself have done before in the past. I'm ashamed to say that it never occurred to me until I was out of practice for probably a solid, 7-8 years that I should ask consent before doing something like a vaginal exam where I'm placing my fingers in someone's vagina. Just the culture just does not teach that that's something that's important to do. We don't center the person giving birth in their experience. And that doesn't mean that people aren't nice. I would never say that I was, you know, mean or forceful or anything like that. And people in the hospital with Candace said that this doctor was nice, friendly, patients love him. But nice is not the same as actually centering the person in their experience. We just have a serious culture problem. And that culture problem gets perpetuated because those doctors and nurses in a hospital, they see the way that they practice. That's how people around them practice. And that just continues. We very much so practice in silos. That is so much of why my work is about expanding those silos and expanding people's awareness of the ability to approach medicine a different way. That's what I do a lot on my professional facing social media, like LinkedIn and Twitter, that kind of thing, of demonstrating that there's a different way that we can practice. And I also want to say that these problems exist for all people giving birth, but they are most certainly amplified for Black women and other people from marginalized communities. And in Candace's case, her education did not protect her. It didn't matter that she had degrees in math, computer science, she's working on a PhD. None of that protected her. None of that mattered when she showed up. And that is an experience that all people can face, but it is most certainly amplified for Black women. And it's not always easy to speak up in these situations, right? You're in a vulnerable position. You may be in pain. You don't want to be labeled as difficult because that can have some consequences, or you worry that it may have consequences on your care. And that's why a couple of things are really important about approaching these situations. Ideally, you want to know ahead of time as best you can that you're not in that type of situation. So you want to prepare yourself, ask questions during the prenatal period. But in the moment of birth, you absolutely need to have an advocate with you who can communicate on your behalf if need be. This is just a must. The reality is this is a must. You need somebody who feels comfortable speaking up for you on your behalf. And I'm not saying you need to go in there guns blazing, yelling, mean, screaming, that kind of thing, demanding, because that doesn't necessarily set a good tone, right? So start from a place of kindness and expressing your feelings. Like, this makes me uncomfortable that you're not asking my permission before you're doing this exam. That's why I don't want you here anymore. Or say that I feel scared, or I feel worried, or these are the things that I want. I just want people to explain things to me. I want people to ask me before they do things. Those are not things that are too much to ask. You can even relate it to, like, if your wife, your sister, your mother, your friend was giving birth, you know, when you want them to be able to have these things too. Okay. So those things are absolutely crucial. Now, the other thing that I want to highlight is that she also in her story demonstrated how it ain't gotta be this way. Okay. It's not hard for us to really just stop for a moment and center the person in the experience, explain things, that kind of thing. She talked about how the replacement doctor was much better. And that is because that doctor had trained with midwives. She was incorporating aspects of midwifery care into her practice. This is a hill I will die on. This is something that physicians can start to do right now. It is something that I found that I did in my practice, incorporate aspects of midwifery care into the way physicians approach practice. We are not anytime soon going to be able to have a midwife for everyone. That is not going to happen anytime soon. And we need to be able to take care of the people who are giving birth right now. Okay. We can all very easily incorporate some of those aspects of midwifery care into our practice. And they make such a big difference in the experience. Like, this is not a hard problem to solve. Okay. So again, we have that culture problem in our system. And in order to combat that, do your best to know your doctor, know the hospital situation ahead of time. That comes from asking questions in the prenatal period, making a birth plan. My birth plan class is a great way to do that. That comes from preparing yourself with childbirth education. Again, my course helps specifically for hospital birth. And just have somebody with you who can advocate for you on your behalf if need be. That's just so, so, so important. All right. So there you have it. Do me a solid. Share this podcast with a friend. Sharing is caring. It helps me to reach and serve more people. I'm on a mission to help as many folks having a baby as I can. And I would appreciate your help in doing so. Also, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now. Apple Podcasts. Most folks listen on Apple. So Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening to me right now. Go ahead and subscribe, and then come follow me on Instagram. We can continue the conversation there. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. I love to hear what you think about the show. Send me a DM, send me show ideas, topics, all of that good, great stuff. And also get all the good information that I share there and post there as well. That's Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week. And remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.